soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
So Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, presented by DaspitLaw.com. 713 call now. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they handle the Soccer Matters show here on ESPN 97.5 as our presenting sponsors long time. All right. Allows us to do interviews like this. The next one, it is Houston Dash head coach Sam Lady joining us now. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Glenn. Good to be back.
Always good to have you on. All right. Especially after a Dash 2-0 win over Kansas City on the road. How about some pros and cons from you on this one? But it's obviously a great response after the San Diego match.
Yeah, a great response. One that we needed, and one that I was expecting the players to come up with. It was essential that we started the game well, especially after the way we started the San Diego game. Glenn, I actually think, said this a number of times, there were a lot of elements of the San Diego performance that were not that bad, but the start was horrific. Right, you conceded a really, really sloppy goal in the first 2 minutes. And then an unfortunate goal with Nat Jacobs being down injured in the 56 minutes. And then, that keeping one of their players onside. And, we still could have done better with that situation. But, yeah, the things, we didn't start well. And then we got what we deserved from it, from the mistakes that we made, Glenn. But there were some positives in that game. And, I was really conscious of, talking to the players of really what Kansas City is got nothing to prove to anybody apart from myself, and we got what we deserved against San Diego, but there were elements of that performance that were really positive. But what we must do now is we have to put performances in that can help us, not just be successful in this game, but help us be successful in, next week, next month, and in 2 months' time when it's really going to matter. So, such a big emphasis on getting the performance right, and that's a consistent message from me, Glenn. I don't talk about winning very often, because it's winning's a byproduct of the process, and we needed to get the performances right to continue the process. So really happy for the players that they responded in that way, and I actually think that until probably the last 10 minutes or so, there were two or three other opportunities where we could have really finished the game off. So really positive display from the players.
Talking to Sam Lady, I would assume that you would like the way these two goals were scored and the timeliness of them. This goal that I think was put together with a Losi switch in the play to Maria Sanchez and then finding Ordonez in the box had to be one that made you smile.
Yeah, I mean, we found the spaces that we anticipated that Kansas City would give us, even though they changed shape. So, yeah, I think Ordonez does a really good job of holding the ball up and bringing players into play, and then obviously getting the ball out to Alozi and a good ball out to Sanchez to switch, and then similar to Ebony Salmon against Portland, we bullied the defender a little bit, and I think we need to do a little bit more of that, right? We've got to be a little bit more aggressive in the opponent's box. So Ordonez did a really good job of rolling the centre back and getting a shot off, and Ebony did the same thing against Portland. We showed. What's really pleasing, Glenn, is that you've got your focal point to the team showing a real hunger and a desire to make something happen in the box. So that was really positive.
Houston Dash head coach Sam Lady ahead of Orlando. We'll get into them in a second. It was Ordonez in the 42nd. It was Prysock in the 54th off a corner. So that's another area that you want to score goals. That had to be pleasing.
Yeah, really good. I mean, you've got to find you've got to find different ways to score, right? Obviously, teams have been double and triple marking Ordonez in the box, which has created opportunities elsewhere for us, but we haven't taken advantage of it. So, Sarah's done a really good job of on the attacking set piece side, and I'm actually surprised that we haven't scored until this game on that side of things. So good to see that. And good for the confidence as well. Good for the buy-in that, you know, the situations and the scenarios that Sarah creates on the attacking side, you know, that they come off. But really, it's about service. It's about speed. And it's about the desire for people to make first contact and get on the end of the ball. So really pleasing. But you're right, the timing of the goals was excellent as well. You know, 3 minutes before halftime, which is, you know, which changes things massively. And then, you know, 10 minutes into the second half. So, really good times to score.
He's Sam Lady, the head coach of the Houston Dash. The Dash now seventh in the 12-team NWSL, so they bump up the standings with that big road win at the Kansas City Current. This Saturday at home against the Orlando Pride, HoustonDash.com, and that's where you can get your tickets. Get out to see that one. The Dash come in at 3-3-3. Orlando Pride coming in at 3-5-1 with Marta. I want to go back to Sophie Hurst in midfield and, you know, obviously Sophie Schmidt, Joelle Anderson, and the game they had at Kansas City.
Yeah, outstanding, right? I think, and even before then, you know, the midfield partnerships that we had were doing okay. At the moment, this is a partnership of players in, you know, Sophie's position at Hurst. Allows Sophie Schmidt to go a little bit higher and play a bit more in between the lines. And obviously Joelle Anderson is on the ball and off the ball, their intelligence and her decision making. She's a really talented player. I mean, she's a game changer for us, Glenn, in terms of how we can play the game and importantly, how we can move the ball up the field, because her quality and her decision making and her precision is top class. And, you know, when she was out injured, we lacked a little bit of that. We lacked a little bit of connecting the dots between the back line and the front line. And JoJo's done a really good job of doing that of late. I mean, really, really positive at the moment. But, you know, plenty of room for growth. It's never going to be enough, Glenn.
Hurst and Anderson, I mean, obviously long-term could be people that or players that contribute to this club for a number of years.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, you know, I agree. And I think one of the things that that's happened right now, Glenn, is we've got players that are back from injury. And now there's real, real competition for places. I mean, the training sessions that we've had in the last 2 weeks, even leading up to San Diego, the sessions were really, really good. Really positive, you know, trending in the right direction. Even this week, there's been more bite in training this week than we've seen in probably the last, you know, 3 or 4 months, because we've got there's real competition there. It's really difficult, Glenn, you know, leaving, you know, picking five players that we're going to leave out of the squad on Saturday. And, you know, some players as a coach, you know, your dream is that players take it out of your hands, right? By putting in number one, putting in performances in games, which is where it really matters, Glenn. It's okay to be good in training, but, you know, if you get the reward of a starting position or coming off the bench, then you've got to perform well in the game. The competition for places is driving the quality, Glenn. It's driving the ambition. It's driving the intensity. It's driving the competitiveness. And, you know, that was one of the things that we were lacking, to be honest with you, when we had so many players that injured.
Sam Lady joining us, Houston Dash. All right, next up is Orlando Pride. And, of course, in comes one of the legends of the game, Marta. You got a local tie with Texas A&M and Ali Watt that came off the bench. They come off a 1-0 loss at Chicago. What do you know about Orlando that you would be concerned about going into this one?
A lot, Glenn. There's a lot to be concerned about. They are a very, very dangerous team. You've got obviously Marta, who's, you know, is a legend in the game and rightfully so for what she's done. But Adriana on their left flank is a huge, huge problem for teams. She's very dynamic. She's very dangerous. She's creative. She's aggressive. She's direct. So, you know, having to deal with that, and then obviously then on the flip side, having to deal with the spaces that Marta picks up on. This is going to be a very, very difficult game. This is going to be, they're a very, very dangerous team. And our first job is to be the best version of ourselves by turning up and starting the game not as well as we did against Kansas, but better than Kansas, because I'm a firm believer of what we did against Kansas last week, Glenn, will not be enough for us against Orlando. This is a very dangerous team. The players know that. We've been drip feeding that all week, that we need to be ready. We have to be ready for this game. And if we're on the back foot, then it will be a long night for us. If you give players like Adriana, you give players like Marta time and space in the ball, they're going to cause you problems. They're going to be dangerous. So, yeah, we're expecting a very tough game. Potentially the toughest game of the season that we've had so far. I think Orlando, at the moment, Glenn, aren't massively underrated. People look at where the points they've got, the amount of wins they've got, but they don't concede a lot of chances, and they always create chances. So we're going to have to be sharp. We're going to have to be sharp in the mind, and we're going to have to be sharp in the body, and we're going to have to get our mindset right from you know, well before kickoff. This is a big game, and obviously then, Glenn, you know, if you can get 3 points in this game, which is what the expectation is at home, you get 3 points in this game, and a little gap starts to open up between, you know, you and teams like Orlando. So a huge test, and one that I'm savouring. I really want to see how the team reacts after a positive win and positive performance against Kansas City, because, you know, you learn a lot when you lose, but you also learn a lot when you win. And, you know, what you learn, in my experience, is how do players react to success and failure. You know, we should be reacting in the same way that we did against San Diego, which is it's a clean state, a clean slate. We've got to build from scratch, and we've got to do more than we did last week to get a positive result this week. So, I've no doubt in my mind that this is going to be a really, really tough game.
Sam, as always, a big thank you for coming on the show. We get you set up and remind all the listeners here tonight that it is Orlando in town this Saturday night. Houston-.com for your tickets. Obviously, we've given some tickets away on the show here tonight as well. So get out to Shell Energy Stadium. Get out there, support the Dash. The Dash come in at 3-3-3 against Orlando, 3-5-1. One of the legends of the game coming into town in MARTA. And, of course, the Dash will look to make it two in a row under their head coach, Sam Lady. Sam, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Pleasure, Glenn. Chat to you soon.
Yes, and we always appreciate that from Sam. Great insight there ahead of this one. By the way, Jane Campbell, 10,000 minutes plus for Jane Campbell now in the NWSL after that last game in Kansas City. So that is a pretty spectacular benchmark there from the Houston Dash goalkeeper, who came up with some very, very big saves in that one. Okay, as we head to break here, we want to remind you about our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. They are our presenting sponsors. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. And, of course, you can pick up the podcast of this show at Spotify, Apple, Google Play. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We got more to come on the show.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. As always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. By the way, you get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, you need representation. It's John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. You need the best. They will fight for your right for compensation. By the way, you contact them. They're bilingual at 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. Also coming up, July 25th, Mexico, Honduras, Haiti, and Qatar, Energy Stadium. You got Guatemala, Canada, and Panama, El Salvador. That's Gold Cup. And then this summer also in Houston, unbelievable. Real Madrid and Manchester United will be here July 26th. Get your tickets at Ticketmaster or LSSE.net. Next guest, great friend of the show. Like to think he's a personal friend as well. Former Newcastle defender. You see him on Fox. He's Warren Barton. Warren, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Glenn, you are a friend of mine, so don't worry. I ain't got that many. So, but yeah, good friend. No problem. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in that same category. All right, let's start off with something very dear to your heart, because in rarefied air, you have played for Newcastle United. You know, what you're feeling now after the season, the Champions League money, the job Eddie Howe did, maybe take us into that.
Yeah, I spent 8 seasons up there, and it's arguably the best time of my career and probably the best time of my life out there. I mean, great people. It's a wonderful football club. It means everything to the people up there. And they'd had 14 years after the last ownership that was demoralising. The new owners come in, and Eddie Howe has done quite a remarkable job. You know, he's got to be a definite candidate for manager of the year with the players. Glenn, and you know as well as I do, you know, we've coached and been around the game a long time. Not only to coach players that you bring into the club, but to make players better that are already there. Joe Linton now being called up to the Brazilian squad. Almiron was looking a shadow of himself that we see at Atlanta. He scored 10, 11 goals this season. And it just means everything to the fans up there. And, you know, yes, it would have been a magnificent season to get into the Carabao Cup, lost to Manchester United. The finishing Europa spot would have been brilliant, but Champions League is where the ownership want to be. Newcastle's coming over to America actually this summer as well. They're going to be stateside, so they'll be around. And it just means that the supporters have got their football club back, their soccer club back, and that means everything to them. And with the job that's Eddie done, it's been brilliant. They're going to spend again in the transfer window. And I think we've been used on stateside, the big six. It's now the big seven, eight. You know, Aston Villa look great as well. But Eddie has done a remarkable job. The way they play, they press high up the field. They're strong, they're athletic, they're quick, they're aggressive. And they're great to watch. And they're the best fans in the world. They've stuck through that club for a long time, but now they can enjoy a Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, PSG in the Champions League. And, it, you know, it's 20-odd years ago since we did that, myself playing against Barcelona and PSV and clubs like that. So it's great for them to have it. And it's great for the Champions League because they're going to enjoy the Geordies. You know, they take over whatever city they are. They have fun. They'll have a few drinks and they support their team. And it's great to know because I know what it means to everybody in that place in Newcastle.
Talking to former Newcastle defender Warren Barton, also with Fox Sports. I'm glad you touched on Eddie Howe making players better, because I think the prevailing thought for people who aren't taking a bit of a deeper dive is that it's essentially just the wealth that has turned this thing around. And we all know it's a lot more than just wealth.
Yeah, I mean, and look, you know, Pep Guardiola has got the wealth, but he's made players there better. And I think that's to him as a credit as a coach. Yes, you know, you've got a you've got money to spend, but you've got to get the right recruitment. I mean, look what happened to Manchester United for a few years. Look what's happened to Chelsea. You know, Chelsea are a shadow of themselves. So, yes, recruitment is nice and money makes it a lot easier, but you've still got to get the best out of your players that you have because, you know, people know in the Premier League, you only have certain transfer windows. You can't trade throughout the season. It's only certain times you get them. And once you get them, you've got to get the right personnel in. And, you know, Eddie's got the right person as well. You know, they've got to be good characters. And the players that was already there under a coach called Steve Bruce, you know, wasn't performing well. You know, Wilson was a good English international, was defending deep, playing deep, not scoring any goals. This season got 18 goals. So that just shows you the quality that Eddie's done, as well as the, you know, making players better, but also making the team better and more enjoyable to create chances. So all round, he's been magnificent. And it first started, you know, Glenn, and I know the club. He turned up on the first day, got there at 6:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, did all his prep work, training work, got onto the field. As he's leaving at midnight or 11 o'clock, there was a fan still sitting on the pavement waiting for an autograph. It would have been quite easy to make out he's on his phone, on his laptop, you know, having a sleep, whatever it could have been. He stopped, signed the autograph, had a couple of moments with the fan and drove off. That tells me he understands the football club and the likes of Sir Bobby Robson and Kevin Keegan, that knew what the football club was. And he'd be loved there now for the rest of his time that he's at Newcastle, Eddie. And he's a joy. And it's great, obviously, for an English coach to be doing well, a young coach. So that's an added bonus as well, being in the Premier League, because we know how demanding that league can be.
Warren Barton joining us here, former Newcastle defender. I'm sure during your time you heard of Super Mac, Malcolm McDonald, right? I mean, how big of a star was he in club history at Newcastle?
Well, I was an Arsenal fan when I was a kid, so Super Mac played for them as well as Arsenal and Newcastle, and he's still a legend up there, Super Mac. Alan Shearer has obviously got his statue outside, and he's now been welcomed back to the club. I was actually invited as an old player with Norberto Solano and Steve Harper and a few other players, Rob Lee, to go back and be a guest of the club where we was never asked before. So there's a lot of change that has gone on in that club. But yeah, Super Mac was a big part of the history that he had up there. KK, Kevin Keegan come along. And obviously Alan Shearer took on the mantle there, and is still the Premier League top goal scorer, unless Harry Kane or Haaland have a good, you know, decade to go and score the goals. But he's still a legend up there, Super Mac, as well as obviously Keegan and Alan Shearer.
Warren, let me take you into one of the great stories of the weekend, which was Luton Town winning the playoff, going into the Premier League, a team that, you know, hasn't been back in the first division or the top of the English pyramid since, I guess, 82 to 92. But take us into some of the provincial feel about clubs like this and what it means to a city and the economy and the mood of people and all these wonderful things that maybe, you know, we don't necessarily get in this country with sports.
Yeah, I mean, it's like going to in the middle of the country in the US, in Oklahoma, and having a double-A baseball team progress up the ranks to AAA, to then have the finance to build a major league team to go in there, where, you know, in that sense, you have to have the money to do this. Where Luton have just kept their same stadium, which actually I played in. It's been modified a little bit, I hope, because it wasn't in great condition then. But it's still in a row of houses, you know, a little street, a little English courtyard street is next to it, is a soccer stadium. So it's not this big land in the middle of nowhere where you've got the car parks and you've got the takeout stores and you've got the shopping malls and everything else. This is right in the middle of people's homes, where Manchester United fans are going to go down, and Arsenal fans, and, you know, Manchester City, Newcastle fans are going to be walking through these little streets, through someone's front room, their living room, where people are having their dinner. They'll be walking past their window to go and watch the game. So it's quite a remarkable story where it's come up the ranks. My old team, Wimbledon, did it years and years ago in the 80s and early 90s. We did that from the lower leagues, got promotion, and then into the promised land. But this is a wonderful story. One of my old colleagues, Mick Hartford, who was a player at Newcastle, that was with me at Wimbledon, he's involved in that club. He played for Luton in the good old times in the 80s. And he's part of that coaching staff. But it's just a wonderful story, Glenn, that someone has actually, there's one player that's played in the lower league, in the you know, double A, gone up to triple A, gone into the major league, and now he's gone into, as I said, the top flight with Major League Baseball. So it's a great story. Whether they're being there for years, who cares? It's just a great story that, you know, where it is, go and Google it, go and have a look at it on the website, because it is in the middle of someone's living room that they're going to be playing. It's a remarkable story. And it's just out north of London, so it's not in Birmingham, it's not in Liverpool or Manchester. It's a little bit just off the A1 and M1, where you go and there's an airport there, small town, very, very much under the radar. They're not a big club in the Championship. They've just been punching above their weight. And it's a great story, and to be in the Premier League. And hopefully their first game is against Liverpool at home, or Man United at home, or Newcastle, or Man City, because it's just a great story. You don't really want them to have Burnley at home their first game. You want it to be a real big game. Sky TV will be down there, or BT, and, you know, we'll have it on NBC over here. They do a great job as well, all the guys at NBC. So they'll be telling you the story as well, because it's unique. It's so, so different.
Get set to hear the words Kenilworth Road, right? And Ethan Horvath, the U.S. goalkeeper on loan from Nottingham Forest, was in goal in that game for Luton Town. All right, Sunday, or this weekend, we've got Manchester United, Man City in the FA Cup. We got two teams that have a number of differing injuries. You got Man City's thinking ahead to the Champions League final. This would be a great capper for Erik ten Hag and United going into the offseason and the transfer window. Maybe position this one a little bit for us.
Yeah, I think it's everything for Manchester United. One as well, Glenn, they don't want Manchester City, their noisy neighbours, to emulate what the great Manchester United team in 1999, when they won the FA Cup against my team, Newcastle. They beat us in the final. They'd already won the league against us as well. We finished third. And then obviously they went on, won a Champions League and that dramatic game against Bayern Munich at the Nou Camp, where Solskjaer and Teddy Sheringham got the late winners in that game. So everything for Manchester United to go out there and play. Pep Guardiola, I think, is undoubtedly arguably in the one or two top managers in the Premier League that we've ever had. I mean, Arsene Wenger goes up there for me and Sir Alex Ferguson, but Pep's not far away. If he's far away at all, the way he's transformed the game, the way he's made players better, their style of football, his attention to detail, but his will to win and drive. You know, we see Miami Heat, Miami Heat in the basketball against Celtics, about that will to win, and you have to suffer to go through. And Pep did that, and he'd be desperate to emulate that and to win the Champions League. But he'll have them prepared for this game. He'll have something up his sleeve. But Manchester United should be a great game, great occasion. They've got everything to play for. So normally when you go into it, it's an underdog, and I don't really see one at the moment. I think City will change a little bit, but they've still got outstanding players. And Manchester United will be going hell for leather that they, one, they want to win the FA Cup and beat their big rivals, but they also don't want them to get that triple, which, you know, Manchester United did in the late 90s as well. And, you know, that game with Miami Heat going up against the wall and getting that result, you can see United having that sort of determination to do it. So it should be a cracking game, one that I'm looking forward to.
You know, we're not talking about Arsenal much now because of the way their season finished. We're talking to Warren Barton of Fox Sports, former Newcastle United defender. But, yeah, it seems like they've kind of been pushed aside. But what a fantastic year for Arteta and Arsenal to get into the Champions League money. Now they have that conundrum of success where, you know, they're going to have to continue to build their team. They're going to have to do something in the transfer market. But, you know, how about a word on just the success of them and kind of Arteta as a disciple of Pep Guardiola and company?
Yeah, it's very similar to what happened to me, Glenn, in the 95-96 season, where we was 9 points clear, 12 points clear, but they had a game in hand with Manchester United. You know, we felt like we had one hand on the trophy and it just slipped away. But, you know, we still talk about that team as the entertainers. And, you know, for Pep and for Arteta, it's a mutual respect that they have. But Arteta's done a wonderful job at Arsenal. He's had time. You know, there was time early on in his career at Arsenal that people wasn't sure and what the program was doing and what the process was going along. But I think he's a good coach. I think he's a big student of the game. I think he's grown into the job. I think he had a chance this season where he was a bit too animated on the sideline. And there's a border of being a top class coach and also conducting yourself a little bit better. But that's pressure. That's what he does to everybody. I think he's got an outstanding group of young players. They just didn't, like we did, they just didn't have the know-how to be a champion. It's just that fine details. And again, it was so similar to us. The harder they tried, the worse it got. And, you know, they lose games. They, you know, get defeated at home against Brighton. Anyone else except City, and in my case, Manchester United, you felt they might have had enough, but City just kept grinding and grinding and grinding and putting pressure on. And they just couldn't get over that hump. They get stronger. I think they've done a great season. I think he's, as I said, a wonderful coach. They had big recruitment this season because they need to add, like Newcastle do. Edu, the ex-Arsenal player, I think he's done well with his recruitment, but they're going to have to go to that next level. But by getting in the Champions League, he can attract that. And being Arteta, who's got a big name in the game, you know, talks of Real Madrid wanting to have him as the next coach after Ancelotti. So, you know, there's a lot of big names out there that want him. So I think he did a wonderful job. Their style of football, you know, Bukayo Saka is one of my favourite players, a young Arsenal player, number 7. Always got a smile on his face. But it just caught up with him as well, Glenn. You know, just you could see he didn't have that spark that he had in October, November, December. And that's what pressure does. You know, it does. It's everything's magnified. And, you know, sometimes it's easy being the one that you're chasing rather than being the one that's being hunted. So it's, but they've done a great season. The challenge is going to be having to do that next season. Because I think Tottenham will get better. Chelsea will get better. Liverpool will be better. I think Aston Villa under Unai Emery, he's going to be better next season. And there's always a Brighton or someone else that comes along that gets a good run in the game. So it's going to be an exciting Premier League next season as well.
Warren, as always, great stuff. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming on the program again tonight, and great insight on the Premier League and everything going on there. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Glenn. Take care, my friend.
As always, that's Warren Barton, former Newcastle United defender. You see him on Fox Sports. We'll take a break. Hey, I just want to remind you, LamontBrands.com. That's where you go. You get the Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats there. All the proceeds go to the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation for Pediatric Cancer, fundraising, awareness, and scholarships. We'll take a break. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm.
Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, by the way, big thank you to DaspitLaw.com, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They are our presenting sponsors. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, you need the best. You get the best through John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. By the way, bringing you soccer on the airwaves for many, many years here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So a big thanks to the Daspit Law Firm for all the soccer conversation. By the way, get the podcast of this show at Spotify, Apple, Google Play. Why don't you go over there and subscribe to this? You can listen to When Your Heart's Desire, and you can also get it at ESPN975.com. Our Romanian football expert, he is Bogdancho, and Bogdancho joins us now. Bogdancho, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. And speaking of Daspit Law Firm, I have quite a few friends who've reached out. So only a lot of good things about that company, by the way.
Great to hear that. Now, let me just preface this. We are hosting the World Cup in 2026. I do want to talk a little bit real quickly here, give some facts about Romania as a soccer nation. They've been to 7 World Cup tournaments. The inaugural one in 1930 in Uruguay they were in. Mm-hmm. If people in the U.S. remember, in 94, those bright kind of yellowish gold uniforms, mm-hmm. you will remember that Romania beat Diego Maradona and Argentina and got into the quarterfinals. How much is that reflected upon in history in Romania with the country, or is that kind of out of sight, out of mind when it comes to football, Bogdancho?
Well, that's a very good question. I think when you look back, you realize, I don't know what the exact timing of a generation is, but let's just say that the newer generation does not have the appreciation for the team, nor the respect that it deserves. We look at the 94 team in Romanian soccer as probably the flagship, the apex of what they could have done. I think they probably would have had a role in playing in the semifinals if they could have just see that Sweden game through in overtime. But overall, I think a lot of the names and a lot of the magic and all the talents of that generation, I think, has been lost right now to a new generation of, you know, more of an instant gratification. I mean, you look at coaches are kind of the same way. You can't have a coach that doesn't win for more than 3-4 games. And then, you know, you have to replace them. So in that regard, I think Romanian football has lost that edge in terms of developing competitive players that can create and mold into a beautiful team. And as if you recall, Bulgaria had a great tournament in 94 as well. So maybe it was a sign of the times at the time, but clearly we haven't seen that kind of success and even talent grouped together in over what now 40 years? What are we approaching? 40-year mark, right? 96, 94. No, wow.
Bogdancho joining us here on the ESPN 97.5 Soccer Matters presented by the Daspit Law Firm. One more question on what we're talking about here. How much has the Federation had a piece in, you know, just maybe not platforming off 94? I know there's been talk of corruption in the local Romanian First Division. I know there's been talk of the Federation not doing the right things to advance player development. Maybe you can take us into that a little bit.
Well, clearly, you're also discussing here, if we're doing the comparison, right, of two separate regimes. You had the communist regime, socialistic, whatever you want to call it, who really invested money, because back in those days, the Eastern Bloc countries, they held it in high regard if they could go out in the sports world and make their mark, right? So that was very important for them. It was almost part of the politics, right, that of each regime. As you move to a free market economy, I think that's where the Romanian league has suffered. I think they have translated that freedom and that ability to now allow investors to come in and take over. So they professionalized the soccer team. It's none of the teams are under the tutelage of an company or a government entity or whatever. So in that regard, they've lost that. And I'll tell you why. Primarily is every single owner that's now owning a team, owns a team in there and runs it. They do not believe in the youth and the development. And I feel that for the most part, this is where the problem is. Instead of giving a chance and developing players from the second to the third and second division all the way to first and giving those kids a chance, we go out and we hire cheap help from, you know, some other countries, which to me makes no sense, right?
Well, isn't the sense, though, that that's deal making, and deal making can make people money, agents money, clubs money?
Absolutely. And I think that's where you point to some of that corruption, right?
You know what's interesting, Bogdancho? That there's a perfect parallel to that in Mexico, where you hear often a lot of complaints about the fact that Mexican players aren't getting an opportunity in Liga MX, and it's maybe a second tier Argentine at times. And again, it's if you're not making deals, agents aren't making money.
Yeah, it's scary to think like that. I've never really looked at it that way. I'm not naive to think that it's not happening, but I'm beginning to think that there's something to it. I mean, look no further than why Romania has not made another World Cup since God knows when, right? And that's because their talent pool is limited to individual players who want to be individual, who want to be known, right? It's the chic thing to do right now. But they have not played as a team. I mean, this team, you look at their lineups every time they play and you're like, all right, we'll be pretty good. They just don't know how to play together. And that's been testimony to the sign of the times that they have. I think you reap what you sow in the end. And I find it to be very unnatural to be upset about it and complain. So, you know, to anybody from those high chairs and institutions, should they ever complain? I mean, they got nobody to blame but themselves. But you know how that goes nowadays with taking accountability and responsibility for your action. Nobody does it. So to each their own.
All right. Let's talk about the Romanian First Division. The title was just won by the legendary Georgi Hagi and Faro. Hagi has created this wonderful player development system. They go right into his first team at Faro. They were down 2-0 in a very critical game here this past weekend to FCSB, and of course came back and won 3-2. They win the title. Tell me a little bit about what this means in Romania. This is a game that you and I actually watched a portion of it, and I found it a very interesting watch.
Well, from that game, what you will remember, first of all, for those who are not any more familiar with Romanian soccer, FCSB is an offshoot of the Steaua Bucharest team. And I think offshoot is probably not the right word. They are kind of the right descendants because they are mired in some legal issues between Steaua Bucharest, which was owned by the army back in the day, and the Army still has a soccer team named Stow in the second division. Be that as it may, that was a huge derby, not only the deciding game for the championship. So this is the second time in the span of maybe a month and a half that, or maybe a few months, that Faru, Haji's team, came back from 2-0 to beat Stow, or FCSB, as it goes by now, 3-2. What stands out for this is Haji, when he started this club, he called it Vitoru, which means future. And he kind of bounced around coaching several teams. Then he created Faru or Vitoru. They merged with Faru 2 years, 2 years ago. And here he is winning his second Superliga championship. It wasn't called Superliga, but it's the first division. So the amazing thing is not the comeback. It's the fact that he can start and trot out there at least half of his lineup with players in anywhere between 17 to 21 years of age. And those guys, as you watched in the game, they have so much maturity and so much confidence in the way they play and they execute that you have to tip your hat off. So I think in that regard, Haji has met his goals that he once set to show the folks that we don't need foreign players sometimes to anchor our teams, and we can do it. Now, granted, he's got one of the best academies in Eastern Europe, dare I say. Haji being a former player of Barcelona and being coached by Cruyff and having played at Real Madrid and Galatasaray, and he's got an eye for talent. So anyways, well-deserved victory for him. And I think entire country of Romania is very happy for him. I don't think there's a club or a person that doesn't like that club, right?
Bogdancho joining us here on ESPN 97.5. Okay, we got about 4 minutes, so we got to fly through a few things here. Now, many people will know Dan Petrescu. Many people will know Adrian Mutu, especially for his time at Fiorentina. These are players that have played for Chelsea. So those names are very familiar. Of course, Georgi Haji is as well. Ilie Dimitrescu is another one. So I want to quickly take you through Petrescu and Mutu. Petrescu coaching Cluj in Romania, and Adrian Mutu obviously played at Rapid Bucharest as well. Take us through those two big names that people are very familiar with.
Well, alongside Haji, Petrescu has probably been the biggest success after Lucescu, of course. We're talking about the newcomers here. So he's done a fantastic job. Remember, Cluj has won the championship of Romania, like, I don't know, 5-6 years in a row or so. So clearly he's got the talent, the know-how, not the most exciting coach to coach a team. His soccer typically is very kind of blah, sits back, kind of like a Jose Mourinho. But he is definitely a coach's coach right there. And then Mutu is probably younger generation. Remember, Petrescu and Haji, same age. Mutu's come back to coaching, and this is probably the biggest team that he's run this season, is Rapid Bucharest, which is, listen, Rapid had a fantastic season. They cratered in the end. But you could tell that Mutu had a good contribution to the club, despite what the fans may tell you right now, as they missed on the big prize, and that is being the champions of Romania.
Talking to Bogdan Posat here, he is Bogdancho, and we appreciate all this insight on the football. FCSB, by the way, you know, you've told me an amazing story about Gigi Becali, the owner who basically is coaching the team. Tell us about that story and how that works, and the fact that he actually purchases a lot of players that Georgi Haji develops, who, you know, then he faced Georgi Haji in this huge game at the end of the season for the title.
And they're also family related. I believe Haji is his godfather to Gigi's wife or wedding, whatever. I mean, you have a lot of money, a lot of folks that have never been in a professional environment, so they act and they run a team the way they think that should be run. And now you're running into this thing that I have so much money. How dare you come tell me how to run my team professionally, right? Go get your own team. So there's a little bit of that, which kind of tells you the quality and education they got. We'll just leave it at that. But Becali has been very instrumental in keeping Steaua relevant after 2002 when the breakup occurred. So he's a very petulant, almost juvenile owner that doesn't really have a plan, but wants to interfere with everything. According to him, it's his money, it's his team, he can make the subs. So it's a well-known fact that if you coach FCSB, you will not be the coach. You will receive halftime messages to who to replace and who to pull out. And as a matter of fact, a big deal was made in the game against Haji this Sunday that they did not have to replace Campagno and the Italian striker and another player because they were doing just fine. And some say that that's how FCSB lost the game. But anyway, those are the kind of things that they do, right? I mean, you have some guy in Greece or in Cyprus that pulled a gun and went onto the pitch and do stuff. It's just crazy for a lot of Americans and other folks who are used to professional sports to kind of witness some of that. But that's what it is. It's all about who you know and how much money you have. Kind of a primitive behavior, if you ask me.
Gigi Becali, the Jerry Jones of Romanian football.
I would think he's more of an Al Davis.
Okay, an Al Davis from the Oakland Raiders. He is Bogdancho. He is Bogdan Pasat. He is our expert on Romanian football. Bogdan, thank you very much for coming on tonight.
You bet. Thanks for having me.